Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I wanted to share with you a theme that has been coming up a lot for me over the last couple of weeks, and that is investing in yourself. This has become incredibly important to me as I've started my own business in February to March. I opened up my own brick and mortar PT practice here in New York City, and these thoughts kind of got rolling for me, and I've really been chewing on them since I took the Instagram intensive course with the Movement Maestro. And one of the things that the Maestro emphasized that struck me, something that I've known, but it just kind of gelled a little more during this course than at other times, is that value is determined entirely by the consumer, right? Whatever value a person derives from some sort of service, particularly in a service-based industry like I work in with teaching classes and education and physical therapy, the value is determined by the client. And it's just kind of as like subtitle, value determined by client. The next piece that I think is really important to understand is that value comes from how much a person sees that their investment is benefiting themselves, that they are finding that a worthy way of investing in themselves, their own progress, their own learning, education, and understanding. And it's something that I've been thinking about a lot. I'm thinking about it in particular now that I am owning my own out-of-network physical therapy practice. So when people are seeking physical therapy, they are committing time and energy and financial resources as a commitment to themselves, really to invest in themselves. And being in an out-of-network practice does demand a little bit more commitment on the part of the patient. It's one of the reasons that I feel really honored and privileged to work with patients in the out-of-network setting. But it is something that someone has to see as an investment in themselves, like an important step forward for their health, longevity, remaining injury free, feeling good in their body, all of those things. And then a third way that this has come to light over the last couple of weeks was sort of a serendipitous moment. I was leaving my apartment and I bumped into my neighbor who lives on the same floor. And he told me that he had just left his job of 8 years to start his own interior design company. And I told him about starting my own PT practice, and we congratulated each other. And he said, you know, it's just such a different mindset now that everything I put into it, I'm investing in myself. I almost couldn't believe that those words came out of his mouth, because it just keeps showing up for me in so many ways. But I think the last time I put out a podcast episode, I wasn't open yet in my new practice. So I'm really excited to announce that I am open. My practice is on West 27th Street in Manhattan, and I've started seeing patients. I do accept Medicare, so I've been seeing patients under Medicare. I'm also seeing patients out of network and some patients who are just coming to me for self-pay. I'm teaching some small in-person classes in the space, which has been really fun. I just started that in March, and it was pretty wild to step into teaching in person again when I hadn't done so since well before the pandemic. And I am also starting up an online class membership again toward the end of April, beginning of May. So since I left my work with the Teachers Cooperative, the Connective, I haven't taught regular online classes since August. I'm getting all of that going again. So if you want to invest in yourself by getting some consistency and accountability with live online classes, you can check out my new membership that's starting at the end of April, beginning of May. If you go to practicehuman.com, look under the services tab, and you'll see online membership, and you can read all about it there. I am really passionate about teaching live and synchronously in the online space. So this is not a big library of old classes. I myself get totally lost and overwhelmed in a big library of classes. The feedback I get most of the time from students is that they don't know what to do, when, how to stay consistent, how to progress, how to improve, how to receive maximum benefits from the classes that they take, when they're just kind of dabbling in a sea of random online classes from a library. So I am committed to building on material week by week. So while my classes are offered live online, you do have the option to watch replays, which are available for 1 month, but they do expire. So it does hold you accountable to keeping up with the class material so that we're all on the same page, so that we're all moving along and learning together. And I can provide you really in the moment education that is the most beneficial work possible, and also you're going to see results and progress from it. And it's going to be hopefully a little bit more interesting to be on a path of learning where we build on material week by week. I can say it is 100% more interesting for me as a teacher to teach that way. I can present what is at top of my mind in terms of work that I'm doing as a clinician in my physical therapy practice. I do bring a lot of that into the classes and just things that I'm really into and jiving on in my movement practice. I'm going to have two classes a week. So one is a strength class, and one is a little bit more of a down-regulating, calming, roll-on-the-floor self-massage, active recovery type class. So again, go to practicehuman.com. You can click on the tab for services. There's a drop-down and find online membership and read more about it. And if you have any questions for me, always you can reach out to me at hello@practicehuman.com. Speaking of investing in yourself, I am excited to present my interview today with Elizabeth Wipf. I am just honored and delighted that I was able to get Elizabeth on the podcast, and even more honored that she's going to be teaching in my space in New York City in May and June. So if you are interested in getting started with strength training from the absolute beginning, definitely check out what Elizabeth is offering. We talk about it a little bit more at the end of our conversation, but she's doing an Intro to Strength Training Masterclass on May 7th. It's a 2-hour masterclass. And then she's also offering Strength Training 101, a 3-week mini course in June. So it's 3 weekends in June for 1 hour and 45 minutes. So these are kind of long sessions that provide a lot of education and background about strength training. And then you can kind of get started with strength training with Elizabeth. And I mean, those of you who have been listening to my podcast and working with me for a period of time know that I treat primarily with exercise, and I am incredibly passionate about educating folks on the benefits of strength training. I think there is no better way to invest in yourself than beginning strength training program. Just for your health, your longevity, feeling good in your body, feeling strong, feeling confident. The list goes on and on and on. And Elizabeth has a lot to share in our interview about the benefits of strength training. So you can find, we'll do a recap at the end of the interview, but you can find Elizabeth's course listings at elizabethwipf.com. That's elizabethwipff.com. Check out her Intro to Strength Training Masterclass coming up May 7th and Strength Training 101 3-week mini course in June. And I am just so, so excited to have Elizabeth's energy and brilliance and teaching, that just the incredible education and teaching that she brings at Practice Human at my studio in person in New York City. So thank you for sticking with me for this long intro. I know there's a lot to catch you up on, and I really hope you enjoy my talk with Elizabeth. I certainly enjoyed finding out a little bit more about her background and her work. I am excited today to introduce my guest, Elizabeth Wipf. Elizabeth is on a mission to demystify strength training for women who want to get in the gym but don't know where to start. As a Gen X woman, she sees strength and conditioning as the perfect way to deal with stress and anxiety, stave off aging, and gain confidence and power. She loves working with her peers to help them realize their strength potential. As a coach and teacher, Elizabeth is known for her keen eye and her ability to make complicated concepts simple and clear. An internationally ranked Masters Olympic weightlifter and national champion, her athletic endeavors started early with soccer, dance,
Iyengar yoga, and therapeutic movement modalities. Elizabeth's lifelong passion for movement, years of theater studies, enthusiasm for fostering healthy, functional movement in her clients, and knack for communicating information concisely and convincingly make her a sought-after teacher and coach. She has been coaching and teaching nationally since 1999. Elizabeth's certifications include a number of CrossFit certifications, U.S. weightlifting level one. She is a former yoga teacher, or maybe, I don't know, Elizabeth, you could say if you still consider yourself a yoga teacher, longtime yoga teacher and yoga tune-up teacher trainer. And she holds a BFA in musical theater performance. And just recently, congratulations, Elizabeth, completed an MA in applied exercise physiology from Columbia University. So welcome, Elizabeth. I know we'll get into a lot more about all of those transitions and how your background in theater performance and yoga and CrossFit and weight training all factor into what you do today. But I'm really excited to hear more about it. And thank you for joining me as a guest.
Thank you. I'm listening to that bio going, holy crap, I did all that. I guess that's what 50 years on the planet will get you, is a lot of stuff. I'm thrilled to be here. I listened to several of your most recent interviews, and I felt like I was hanging out with my friends, because in fact, I was. The people you've had on are some of my nearest and dearest friends and colleagues. And so to hear them talk about their journeys and their points of view, I actually was walking in the park listening and was wishing I could be on the call with them because I wanted to join in the conversation. So so thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you. And I want to say too, in terms of all of your background and your you defining yourself as a Gen Xer, even though I'm like in the weird cusp generation between Gen X and millennials and no one knows what to call it, I identify so much with Generation X, and I'm excited to hear more about how that just kind of, I don't know, the fire of the, being a part of that generation has fueled some of your endeavors as well. I think that's really interesting.
So I feel more a part of my generation as I get older. I think, of course, you know, you start to go, oh wait, you're younger, that you guys have a totally different experience, like millennials and Gen Z. And but my point of view in the world is sort of through the Gen X lens, but also from the, and I don't know if you want to talk about this later, but sort of the West Coast upbringing and the East Coast adulthood that have sort of shaped my view. But as far as being a Gen Xer, you know, Gen X is the latchkey generation, the slacker generation. You know, we were all these epithets were sort of thrown at us, but I also think Gen Xers were the last. We straddled the divide between the analog and the digital world. All of my Gen X friends are very resilient and resourceful and tough, dare I say. We have rolled our eyes way more than anybody else in the world. mostly at our parents, but also now at younger generations. We are often forgotten in the fight between the boomers and the Gen Zers. But I think why I'm identifying with my generation right now is this year I turned 50, and I feel young. I feel like I have a lot to do in the world. And I feel like all of a sudden my age really matters in a way that it hasn't before. And I look around at people my age and a little older and a little younger, and know that I have a skill set as a strength and conditioning coach, former yoga teacher, lifelong mover, that I can share to help them be more, the word vibrant is coming to me, and this is sort of like bad yoga language in my mind, but like, you know, strong and athletic and vibrant in the world and doing the things we have to do. Because quite frankly, we still have shit to do. I mean, like I woke up on my 50th birthday and I was like, wow, this is real. It's real, but I have a lot left to do. And in order to do that, I need to be in a healthy, strong, stable body. So,
So agree with that. Yes. I was thinking you could share a little bit, because I know it's interesting to me and interesting to a lot of our listeners. We were just having a little side conversation before we hit record that so much of this podcast has been about being in transition between modalities and the way that we bring different parts of ourselves or parts of our prior work into kind of the next realm of exploring a change or a shift or moving in a different direction. And I know, Elizabeth, with your background coming from yoga and then moving into mm-hmm. CrossFit and then your competitive training for Olympic weightlifting mm-hmm. and what you're doing now, there have been some major transitions there. Could you share a little bit about how you've moved from one place to the next and why and what you've learned from that?
Yeah. I'll go back and sort of seed this with the fact that I was raised by two people who were like, you want to do that thing with your body? Go do it. You want to climb that tree? Go do it. You want to ride your bike that way? You know, there were some bad things. I was a child who loved Evel Knievel. So I decided to ride my bike down the back steps when I was a tiny child. They weren't in favor of that. But, you know, I was very physical and given a lot of opportunities as a kid, roller skating and dance and soccer. And like I said, climbing trees and running around in the backyard. And my parents supported that by and large. And so I have sought out living in the world through the physical as just a sort of natural extension. I think that being in the theater, studying dance and voice was part of that. Following my curiosity, as my friend Ariel Kiley says, you know, following your enthusiasm. So that was sort of the seed of it. When I was 15, I had taken dance, mostly like sort of tap and theater dance, and I had designs on coming to New York and going to musical theater school, which I eventually did. But I knew I needed ballet. I had this whole plan. I knew I needed ballet, but I hadn't taken ballet. So at 15, I went and took ballet with the little kids, like the 7-year-olds. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted that. I know. And it was a really good ballet school. A lot of the kids from the school went to the San Francisco Ballet and did the Nutcracker sort of thing. But I was more interested in learning movement and being good at movement than I was worried about sort of judgment. And, you know, like I always had a plan. Mm-hmm. So that helps all of these transitions I've made. As an adult, I found yoga. I found my way back to yoga. Yoga is something I've done all my life. I have a book that I got for my 4th birthday, a yoga book that I got for my 4th birthday, and took Iyengar yoga classes when I was in my teens with my mom. And then when I was in New York in my 20s, it was sort of the era of Jivamukti and Power Vinyasa and all of that. And Crunch Gym had these amazing classes, and I went and I took the classes there, and I was like, oh my God, I want to do this. This makes me feel good. It makes me feel normal, healthy, strong. And sort of, I turned away from my plan to be an actor because being in yoga was more fulfilling at the time. And so I just found sort of an organic kind of thread, and I just followed it. So I don't know if that's very helpful in people who are like going through transition, but I followed my enthusiasm into yoga and then eventually teaching. And what happened about 10 years into teaching, so it was a long time, you know, my body had made all the shapes. I had taught at least 10,000 hours at that point, if that's even the number that we were trying to hit for mastery anymore. And I was in my mid-30s, and I don't know, for some reason I started thinking, is this all there is? You know, is this all my body is going to do for the rest of my life? And through various channels, CrossFit kept coming across my threw my way, right? Like I saw a CrossFit class when I was walking down 38th Street one day. It was in this storefront. I was like, what the hell are they doing? That's horrifying. And I want to do it right now. Uh-huh. And it took a couple years, but eventually I found my way back. And as I was beginning to kind of try it and learn about it, I was lucky enough to have a friend who was also a yoga teacher, Keith Wittenstein, who was one of the first CrossFit coaches in New York and also a movement sort of polymath. And I had coffee with him and I said, I think I want to do this. I think I need it. And he said, just go, just get stronger. You won't regret it.
Yeah.
And I did. And I fell in love with it. And I fell in love with the intensity and I fell in love with the community. And at the time, and I think we saw this in the yoga community, when I started teaching yoga, it was very like yoga wasn't underground because yoga's been around for a long, long time. But in the early aughts iteration, it was sort of underground and people were just sort of finding their way and it was kind of open source. And CrossFit was the same. It was like, it wasn't this sort of what we see on TV or what we sort of make of it and we joke. It was very much people sharing their experiences and sharing their thoughts. There wasn't equipment. There weren't special shoes. There weren't clothes. It was just a group of people who are really excited about this new idea of fitness.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And P.S., what has happened with all of these things is that my enthusiasm for doing it has turned into a job. So you know, lo and behold, after a couple of years of doing CrossFit, my friend Keith owned a gym and, you know, was looking for coaches. And it was kind of like, hey, you know how to lead a class. Come do this. Mm. And that sent me on a very different path. And the transition physically, like as a practitioner, wasn't 1, 2, 3 go. It was sort of woven in, you know, I still did yoga a little bit and I still did CrossFit. And then eventually CrossFit took over. Same thing with teaching. I was teaching yoga and coaching CrossFit at the same time. Which it was a bizarre situation.
I was gonna ask if there was some crossover, or I was gonna ask if you were still teaching yoga for a while you were practicing CrossFit and how that went for you. But if you're actually teaching 100%. Both at the same time, that's even more of like a double whammy of lots of things going on.
Lots of things. Like I would go to some advanced Iyengar class, and then the next day I'd go to CrossFit, and because I had a mentor and a friend, so Keith eventually became my boss and sort of taught me how to be a CrossFit coach. He was also doing yoga at the gym a little bit, and he was still teaching when he first opened his gym. So there was a precedent for it.
Yeah.
But I think it was more leaving teaching yoga was more about being done teaching yoga than it was about wanting to only coach CrossFit. Mm-hmm. And I think I had sort of seen it to its natural end. I think the restlessness that you and some of the people that were sort of coming up behind me were feeling, I was feeling already, I was feeling sort of, a couple years ahead of, the sustainability of it as a job. What the demographic was of the students was not as serious anymore. And I wasn't interested in just giving people 500 sun salutations and sending them home. I was really invested in teaching. It's interesting though, because I jumped into a 500-hour teacher training in an attempt to kind of reignite my enthusiasm for teaching yoga. And it was in that teacher training that I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And what was lucky, and I understand that some people listening to this that are teaching, it's really scary when you don't have anything else. And I was really lucky that I had something else. I had cultivated CrossFit coaching, and in fact was able to very robustly jump in and make a full-time living at it. But there were identity pieces too. There were, and in some ways other people had a harder time giving up my identity as a yoga teacher than I had, you know, like years after I had quit, people were like, you know, well, how's the yoga going? I'm like, well, I haven't taught yoga in like 5 years.
Yep. I get that too. So, yes.
Yeah.
Totally
relate
to that.
Yeah. So there's that transition. I'm going to just take a breath here because I realize I've been chatting with you. I've been talking for a little bit, but that was the transition. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a cut. It wasn't a line in the sand. It was both and.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, like you said, that is probably a little bit more supportive feeling or firmer ground feeling way to do it, to have the other thing that you're transitioning into. I know when I had my reckoning with yoga, which was a little bit more of a reckoning than a fizzle of I don't want to be doing this anymore. I was about to enter into school for physical therapy. So for me, I was like, okay, well, I have this next thing. And I felt really like grateful and kind of privileged that I had this next thing to go into, where so many of my peers and colleagues and other people are just kind of swimming in these very kind of murky waters of like what's coming next. And this was like also getting very close to the pandemic, which things got a little murky even before the pandemic.
Really
and of
murky.
Course, with the pandemic for yoga teachers, it was just a disaster. So, so it was for me, I can really relate to that idea of like having some kind of clarity or firm ground of something to stand on as a next thing, being super helpful in that process, because it's hard to leave a community and a practice and discipline that you're so enmeshed in. And like you said,
it's
still
it's
people
about identity.
Identify you that way. And identity.
It's about,
sure.
I mean, yes, like after I had left, people still identified me. But as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, there is so much, especially with something like yoga, with a sort of lifestyle identity that, and an expectation of the people that walk in the room that, you know, my husband is in ad sales. People don't have a lifestyle identity associated, you know, they don't expect him to, you know, be a vegan and, you know, and go on meditation retreats. You know, that stuff is not part of his profession. But I think in yoga, because it is a life, quote unquote, lifestyle profession, that identity is really hard to shed, both personally and then just sort of interpersonally.
Yeah.
So having another thing to call yourself is nice. I mean, you know, artificial, but nice. Yeah.
Right. Yes, exactly. It's like a facade, but not a facade, but yes. Yeah. Yes. It's helpful. I wanted to get a little more on your thoughts about your audience with your work and your teaching. You mentioned to me that you consider your target audience women between 45 and 65 years old, especially those who have never done any strength training. There was a line that really stood out to me on your website. I'm going to read it because I think it is so powerful. Yep. You said, here you'll find traditional no-frills strength training that helps you realize your body's potential and connect to the powerhouse that already lives inside you. And I think that really speaks to like my experience with you, knowing you over the years. I was like, yes, that is Elizabeth. But also, I think that's a powerful statement in light of this audience of women between 45 and 65 years old.
So I think the way to transition into this and talk about this is to talk about the next transition I made. And to just very, very briefly, I don't want to over talk this, but to address CrossFit, because I think CrossFit gets a bad rap. I think there's a lot of problems with CrossFit. I think there's a lot of problems with yoga. I think there's a lot of problems with Zumba. every movement modality has its balance sheet of pluses and minuses. But what I got from CrossFit as a woman was the ability to do things in with my body that I'd never done before, to lift heavy weight, to move, flip tires and whack things with sledgehammers and carry things and push my body to some pretty intense limits in a yeah. community that was like, that saw me as an equal. Hmm. And I am not going to say that there's no sort of, you know, a gender double standard in CrossFit. Of course there is. And especially as it becomes more of a kind of a lifestyle thing, but you know, in the beginning, we all had long knee socks and Converse and we're trying to figure out how to deadlift more and how to do better, you know, handstand pushups. And nobody's effort was seen as less than because they were bigger, smaller, female, anything. It was, we were all in it together. And that by and large translated into coaching ish. Where that wouldn't translate would be like people coming in from the outside. But transferring into my first strength, real deep strength training experience being CrossFit, when I would lift my head and look out into the world and people were like, oh, that's not my experience. It was like, what? Well, it doesn't have to be that way. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe that. The other piece of it is just being exposed to so many different kinds of movement. I think I said that a few moments ago. Just the things that women aren't normally exposed to in the gym really, really helped me with my confidence and made me want to bring this out into the world more. When I left CrossFit, because it was just time, and it's been a long transition. When I went back to school to get my master's, I was like, all right, what is this? What am I doing? And the more I thought about it, the more I looked up, the more I sort of realized, holy crap, my peers need help. There are people out in the world who need help that aren't getting it and that can really, really benefit from it. And I have a decade of experience both as a coach, as a teacher, and as a competitor that that can really contribute to making a change in people's experience of strength training. So, and I believe that they can. I believe that they can do it. I believe that that quote that you read, I believe that.
Yeah.
I believe that if you get fundamentals and you're taught how to train yourself, mm-hmm. that the most important thing that you get is confidence. Confidence yep. in the fact that you are a powerful person, whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. Quiet power, loud power, you know, passive power, whatever it is. So that's sort of framing that. Did I finally get to the answer to the question?
Yeah. And I think that brings me to my next question, or what I wanted to talk to you about in terms of your work now specifically, is that you yeah. are all about education, like teaching people how yeah. to do for themselves, right? So
yeah.
you mentioned yeah. that you don't consider yourself a personal trainer. You're not showing up for the accountability piece just to take somebody through the motions. I don't mean just like in any kind of demeaning way or anything like right. That's important. Like yes. doing the thing and the accountability to show up and do the thing is super important. I'm not taking away from that, but you consider yourself more of a teacher as opposed to someone who's there for the accountability to take somebody through the exercises you want to teach people to do for themselves and have the confidence yeah. to train themselves really with the education yes. you provide. Is that right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That is the plan. You know, so I'm a competitive Olympic weightlifter. People don't actually know what that is. Olympic weightlifting, or weightlifting, one word, capital W, is the only barbell sport that is contested in the Olympics. It consists of two movements, the snatch and the clean and jerk. The snatch starts with the bar on the floor and ends with the bar over your head. The clean and jerk goes from the bar, from the floor to your shoulders, and then from your shoulders to overhead. Mm-hmm. I will send some links so that people can go, can look at it. It's a very specific sport. But what I've learned from that, and this will tie back to the education piece. I largely train alone. I have a coach. And I also coach a weightlifting group, a team mm-hmm. or a class, however you want to define it. And in both of those situations, my own personal and in the situation with the people I coach in a group, they have a program of things to do, and they do it without my prompting. And I'm mm-hmm. there to ask and answer questions. So I'm there to coach, to teach, to observe, to give feedback. And what I observed in that setting, both with my own training, solo training, and with coaching a weightlifting team, is that the progress that people make taking ownership of their training is far greater than being put through their paces by a trainer. Mm-hmm. And so that I have that to stand on, and I firmly believe, and the data, here we go back. I'm going to go back to grad school.
Please, the data.
It, right? Yes. In the study of motor learning, one of the things that contributes to better performance is autonomy.
Yep.
And failure.
Yep. Trial and error, so, self-efficacy, you know, all of those things. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yes. So what I sort of came to, and what I'm working on right now, and I'm working on with you essentially, because I'm going to be teaching at your I keep wanting to call it a studio, but you can, I don't know how we define it, studio, is to give people really foundational skills so they can get in the gym and start training and maybe fail, but fail in a way that is safe. Mm-hmm. I spoke to a lot of women last summer when I was sort of conceiving this, and you know, people were saying things like, I don't know what any of the equipment is. I don't know how to pick it up. I don't know how to put it down. Mm-hmm. I don't know where my lats are. I don't know what a kettlebell does. And so the education that I want to kind of, that I'm talking about is very basic. These are the things that, mm-hmm. that, these are the stations in the gym. This is what the equipment does. And then here's four or five basic kind of groups of movements: squatting, hinging, pushing, pulling. And if you take this and you know how to use all the equipment and you have these four foundational movements to begin, I'm not talking about forever, mm-hmm. you can get a pretty good strength workout and for the rest of your life. So yeah. my goal in anything I'm offering now that is not my weightlifting team is to give people the skills they need, the movements they need, the knowledge of the equipment, the knowledge of things like sets and reps, like how many of these do I do, in mm-hmm. really basic terms, so that they can go in the gym and go, okay, I got 30 minutes, which by the way is plenty.
Yep.
30 minutes. I'm going to do squats and presses. And I know that I can do squats and presses with a kettlebell and two dumbbells. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do three sets of five and three sets of eight, and I'm going to be done.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to go and I'm using a kettlebell and two dumbbells. Oh, the kettlebell I wanted to use is being used by somebody else, or it's not here, or I'm in a hotel gym and I've got, you know, all this weird equipment I've never seen before, but I know I need to squat and I know I need to press. How can I make this work? Mm-hmm. That's how you get people to train. Because if I say you have to use a 16K kettlebell and two 10-pound dumbbells and you don't have that available, or there's no bench so you can't sit, well, maybe you stand. Or, mm-hmm. you know, your knee hurts, but you still need to squat. Okay, well, maybe you squat to a bench, or maybe you don't squat below parallel. Maybe you don't squat at all. Maybe use the leg press machine. But to be able to kind of adapt, mm-hmm. That's my goal.
Awesome.
Eventually. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so great. And it's so great to help people understand that they can have a simple plan,
right? Like to go into the gym with a simple program that they can execute and feel confident with. And I think that's, I don't know, in my experience, I think that's really important for those times when you just don't feel like it. Like that is not the time to go into the gym and be like, what am I going to do today? It's like, no, just like it's easy. You don't have to overthink it. Just go in and do the program and you'll walk out of there feeling a million times better. And you'll be like, okay, done. I did it. It took me 25 minutes. I did it in and out. I feel like that kind of clarity too is so important to just set people up with a simple, repeatable program that then they can like, you know, have fun with, improvise on, change it up based on how they feel day to day with their knowledge of how to change it up based on how they feel day to day. But just foundational programs like that to start with that just you don't have to overthink it and you can have it in your back pocket to just go in and do it anytime, especially those times when it feels like it's hard to do.
And I think in, I think in this phase of life that I'm in physiologically, physically, you know, I'm a little beat up from mostly, I would say, from trying to put my leg behind my head in yoga for all those years. But I'm a little beat up. I have stuff going on in my life. You know, I can't. I do train hard, and I actually, we can talk about that in a minute because I think women do need to really kind of go after it. But there are days when I like you said, I've got to get in and get out. I don't feel like it, and I've got to squat and press, or I've got to hinge and pull. And 9 times out of 10, what happens is when I don't feel like it, if I'm there for 5 minutes, all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, why didn't I do this earlier? Why didn't I get here? Like, I feel like $1 million. So, you know,
you just start and then you're off and running.
Yeah, exactly. I had an acting teacher who, I can't remember the specific thing, but the essential sentiment was like, you know, instead of making a dramatic entrance, start the scene off stage. And that is not to say like in the sort of context of theater, it was like, not just to say your lines off stage, but like be in the scene off stage, start slowly, start gently, start gradually, walk into the gym, get on the treadmill, get like, you know, even on the days when I know I've got to, you know, go hard, I always kind of ease into it.
Yeah.
I always ease into it. Unless I've got 30 minutes to do an hour's worth of work, but I always ease into it. And that ends up being the right choice all the time.
So nice.
Yeah.
Going back to Elizabeth, what you mentioned is your target audience, women between ages 45 and 65. I'm curious to hear what some of the barriers are there and some of the reasons why for you this is the important demographic to focus on. I think things have shifted a little bit over recent years in terms of how strength training is perceived. But maybe you can also talk a little bit about from your experience dating back to when you transitioned into CrossFit and then into Olympic weightlifting, how or if you've seen that things have shifted in terms of just kind of the, I don't know, general societal perception of women and heavy strength training, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think I want to talk about kind of why strength training matters first. And then I think that'll be helpful for us to talk about the objections. Strength training, and you and I both know that exercise science data on women, female humans, is really lacking. As is progress with women in sport. Title IX, you know, one of the foundational things of my life is that I was born post Title IX, which is the government law that says that both male and female sport, women's and men's sport. I know we're going through a real transition, but with this right now, but men and women deserve equal funding and opportunity in sport in educational institutions that get government funding. So that's what that's all about. But women didn't run. I mean, I don't think that they ran in the first Boston Marathon until like the 70s or 80s. The first women's Olympic weightlifting contest wasn't until 2000 in Australia. So wow. Women in sport and women in strength. Yeah, it's bananas. And then as far as science goes, we know that, you know, most exercise physiology studies have been on young men because those are the people that were in the programs, and they use people in the programs to do the studies. So strength science is particularly evolving, especially as it applies to middle-aged people and middle-aged women. The big objections that I hear and I still hear are, I'm worried about getting bulky, and I'm worried about getting hurt. And to this, I will say, why do you think that? And who taught you that?
Right.
And who cares? Why do you think that? Yes. You know, like, and who cares, right? Like, why do you think that? Why do you think you'll get bulky? Well, because some women in the 80s who probably took performance enhancing drugs who were bodybuilders created this kind of image of what it was like to be a woman with, and I'm not, that's not pejorative. It is pretty certain that most female bodybuilders in the 80s, in fact, the sport has changed and women, that physique is sort of out of favor in the sport of bodybuilding. It's pretty, the data is that they were taking testosterone or some performance enhancing drug. So you're not going to look like that unless you take performance enhancing drugs. Or maybe you will because your body is predisposed to that. But who the hell cares? What you look like is about you and your relationship with yourself. So there's a beauty thing here that's sort of like, and P.S., those people work really, 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 really hard. And if you're doing two 30-minute strength workouts a week for your health, for your bones, for your cardiovascular health, for your mental health, to combat heart disease, diabetes, osteoporosis, et cetera, you're not going to become this sort of Amazon, right?
Yeah. And spending any time around people who intentionally bulk up, you will see like how much they have to eat and train. Just like, it's like so much work goes into that. Like, people aren't just going to casually be like looking bulky. Like, yeah.
Correct.
Yes.
I will say that there is sort of this aesthetic that comes and goes of like being really scrawny for women, which, listen, you can look however you want, but I don't want people to confuse visible muscle with bulk. Because if you start strength training, you may develop visible muscle. And that is your personal choice. But so there's that objection. The will I get hurt objection is, you're more likely to get hurt if you don't strength train.
Right.
You know, like the concern that picking up something heavy off the floor is going to wreck your back. I mean, if you try to lift more than you need to, if you do it too fast, if you do it when you're, you know, not paying attention. I mean, all the reasons why you would get hurt doing anything else. There is you do need to pay attention. Your body needs time to adapt. The tissues need time to develop, not just your muscles, but your connective tissue needs time to adapt. And if you start slowly and you do it with knowledge and some kind of supervision or just education, the hurt that people are concerned about, I think that risk is mitigated significantly. And I think that the benefits outweigh the risks.
Absolutely.
You may have some commentary on that just from your end, from your therapeutic end of things.
Yeah, I completely agree.
the net benefits outweigh the risks entirely of starting up any kind of exercise program. Yes. Yeah.
And putting, I mean, you know, if you want to get kind of scary, like sarcopenia is a real thing and osteoporosis is a real thing. Sarcopenia is muscle wasting. There also is a new term called dynapenia, which is about muscle quality as opposed to muscle, like loss of muscle. And then osteoporosis are real afflictions. And I'm sorry to tell you, but a lifetime of, you know, headstands and shavasana is probably not going to stave off those things, unfortunately. Not that those things aren't awesome and great and do really good things to you, but as you've been talking about, you need to jump, you need to load the bone, you need to, I mean, if you're running all the time, you need to sprint a little bit, you need to challenge the body in ways that is muscle building and bone building, especially if you're a woman. You know, falling, it's kind of an old saw in the clinical world, and also I think in the exercise world, but it bears repeating, you know, people who fall and fracture their hip are more likely to die. And that's really dramatic, but it's real. And the reason is muscle loss of mobility leads to muscle loss, which leads to just general lack of movement. And living a sedentary life is really, really bad for your health. It's really dangerous. So strength training at my age, at the 45 to 65, the reason why I think it's important is you're young enough to kind of, you can still go ham in the gym. You can still do some pretty hard work in the gym. Listen to me sounding like a gym rat. And you can still stave off those afflictions. You can still reverse those afflictions. And you still have some time. Is it ideal? No, I'd rather you started when you were 15. But if it, the best time to start, if not 15, is 52. So, and that is not to say that someone who is in their 80s can't benefit from strength training. But I think that middle-aged women, also, what I've seen from talking to women I mentioned is you're at a point in your life when you still, like I said, you still have stuff to do, but you may have some issues, physical issues that, or you're beginning to see that a little bit of decline in health. Maybe your cholesterol is high. Maybe your bone density is low. I have a friend who has had crippling back pain, back injury, has had surgeries. She's very tall. And I think that is part of her issue. And she's never strength trained. She's very tall. She's been a runner, and couldn't get a handle on the strength, on the back pain, like in the hospital with back pain. And she finally started strength training, and all of a sudden she has her life back. Yeah. All of a sudden at 51 years old, she can make plans for the rest of her life that don't involve, we went to Disney World and she got on Space Mountain and she was like, I don't know if I can do this. And I was like, okay, well we can skip it. And she's like, no, I'm going to try. And she went on Space Mountain twice and she wouldn't have done that with her son. And she would not have done that if she hadn't. So that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. So it makes getting the bulky thing is sort of minor. When it's like you get to live your life, if you're in a strong, stable body and you feel confident walking through the world, it doesn't matter if you have to buy a bigger pair of pants. It really doesn't.
Yeah, you just have at a least bigger in my world.
Exactly. World. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so exciting too. I mean, I just want to throw this in there as somebody who had started strength training when I was very detrained, like hadn't been lifting weights. It's so exciting as a beginner strength training because you make huge progress so fast. Yeah. It's like, whoa, it is. Yeah. It's kind of awesome. I mean, it's not kind of really awesome. It is awesome. It feels so good. I mean, if you're somebody who likes to see progress, if you stick to strength training,
Right, exactly.
You'll see progress. If you're detrained and you start strength training when you haven't been strength training, oh, it's so fun to see how much progress you make.
Nothing like the first 6 months of strength
training. Oh, yeah.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting. And you know, as you progress, one of my greatest joys as a coach and a teacher is watching people do that, watching people progress and do things they never thought they could do. You know, like the girl who,
yeah,
I had a client who I worked with who was dealing with some trauma, you know, and as young women do, and she did her first 200-pound deadlift. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, the confidence that she got, and I'm not saying that we can heal all traumas with deadlifts, but
right. There's
a certain shortcut to sort of self-efficacy and self-determination that happens when you pursue strength training that is like nothing else.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun. And it's really freaking hard, but it's really worth it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I wanted to finish up our talk with just a little bit. Maybe we can just touch on this briefly, although this could be a whole other episode, about collaboration and working across a variety of modalities, or if you want to call it an interdisciplinary team, in working with folks across strength training, other modalities, physical therapy. I know if you're comfortable sharing a little bit about it, Elizabeth, I know you have recently kind of worked through an injury with an interdisciplinary team of folks who helped you through that process. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. I think you had mentioned something just in our pre-interview chats about collaboration versus competition and how we kind of tread those waters as practitioners who have transitioned through multiple modalities and continue to work through with and through multiple modalities.
Yeah. I think there's two, and I agree, this could be a whole podcast conversation. I think there's two thoughts on this. And one is not to do with my injury and my team, but one is to do with there's enough as a professional, like it's funny to see a lot of yoga teachers are now all of a sudden like, oh, I'm lifting weights now. They're the first people to ever do it. It's like, and some not, some are like, oh my God, you've been doing it for years. Look at me. But there's enough to go around. There's enough to like, just in the movement space, there is enough to go around. So relax.
Yeah.
What I have to say, like you and I, how we have different, higher education training, but you and I are sort of in a similar space in terms of like getting people stronger and healthier. But there's enough to go around that you and I can exist in the same space, or another female strength coach can exist mm-hmm. in the same space and collaborate and contribute to each other's success and mm-hmm. not push that person to the side. I just think it makes for a better professional environment. So that's one piece of that. The other piece is, yes. So I had, in the summer of 2020 or 21, I can't remember anymore. 2021, I had a really bad back spasm. And usually I've had stuff before. I have a really hypermobile body. Part of the reason why I started doing CrossFit was that I was too noodly and I needed to kind of, I knew at 35, I was like, I got to put some meat on my bones so I don't, and some strength in my joints so I don't fall down. So it's something I've worked with for years and years and years. But I can't even remember the timeline. I think it was post-COVID. I had a back spasm and I couldn't get rid of it. In the past I had been able to, okay, I'll take a couple of days off. You know, if I have to take a muscle relaxant, I will, you know, like all the things didn't work. fast forward to an MRI of my hip, which I've had surgery on, and my low back, and I had a herniated disc, a couple of other discs that were threatening herniation and some degeneration in my hip. And my physiatrist who I work with called me, and she said, who's an athlete, and she said, you know, if you weren't as strong as you are, you would not be mobile right now. And so that collaboration, like her as a physician respecting what I do, was really important to me. And then she was able to guide me to some PTs who it took a little trial and error. P.S. I continued to train around my injury. I continued to train. I continued to move. I continued to walk. I continued to work on my upper body. I continued to strengthen my legs as I could without stressing my injury. And then I found a group of people who, I don't know if we want to shout out in the interest of collaboration. I don't know if we want to shout out that group of people, but I found a physical therapy office that was sort of the exact thing I needed. They respected me as an athlete. They respected that I needed to get from acute PT, because I had done some sort of acute rehab PT stuff, through it back into strength training. And so I worked with the guys over at Reload in New York City, and they gave me a program. And at no point did they tell me to sit down. At no point did they tell me to stop training. They were available to me via text, but their work was very thorough. So I was able to do the work. I was able to do the training on my own. It was all very active. It was all exercise based. There was no stim. There was no massage. I mean, I definitely get massages and I do that sort of thing. But and because of my background in, you know, I think having been a yogi and having taught other sort of yoga-like modalities, I had a lot of tools in the tool bag in terms of rehab, and I've done enough movement in my life that the more physical therapy movements that they gave me, I was able to adapt to right away. And I was given a general physical preparedness training program that I worked in with my weightlifting program. And awesome. So that was in December of 21. And in March of 22, I became the Masters National Champion in my weight class and my age group.
So awesome. So
and great. Then went on last December to become, to get a bronze medal in the World Championships.
Yeah.
So... And I continue to work with them. That's the other thing, is I continue to work with them. I continue to work with my coach, and they support what I'm doing. They support what I'm doing, and will, if I have a problem, we solve it. They don't tell me, they don't say take a rest. They don't say go see a, I mean, if I need to see a doctor, I'd see a doctor, but it's not, there's no catastrophizing. There's no, like, I had a weird kind of, not a relapse, but like a little kind of moment like 2 months ago. I was doing nothing and I had a little zinger in my back, and I was like, oop. And I texted my trainer, and he was like, okay, we're gonna change up your training a little bit. We're gonna work around it until you feel stronger. And some of it has to do with them looking at the whole, I mean, definitely looking at the whole person, but also understanding, in some, it's like this sort of meta thing, because it's also a multimodal approach in terms of like, well, maybe you need to be more cardiovascularly fit. Maybe you need to be, your legs need to be stronger. Maybe you need, so that was the thing that I really appreciated. I'd been doing all this strength training, and when I first went to see them, and the trainer, so I met with a physical therapist and a trainer, a strength training coach, and the trainer was like, you're in terrible shape. You need more general physical preparedness, meaning like just general fitness. I had focused so much on my sport.
Conditioning. Yeah.
Yeah. My conditioning and my sort of like getting in all the corners, you know, it's like you're cleaning your window, but you're only cleaning the center of the window, and it's dingy and dirty in all the corners. So.
Right. That's a good way of putting it. I like that.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you can still see out, but it's like, oh, wait, the sun would shine if you washed this part. So, and I firmly believe, I have over the years, I've gotten body work a lot over the years. I've been lucky enough to be able to both afford it and to have access to it. And, you know, I have a number of different people that I've seen over the years, because not all body workers are the same. Not all body mm-hmm. workers are for every issue. I'm lucky enough to sort of have had that lens to mm-hmm. to kind of look through as I've rehabbed my injury, and to continue to kind of maintain.
Yeah,
because it's not gone. I didn't have surgery, you know.
Right.
I still have that in my body.
Yep. So that's a beautiful example of continuing to train with it, around it, through it, mm-hmm. being in a place where your net gains are, it's better, despite the fact that, you know, like you've been working through injury and through pain. But if you would have just taken a bunch of time off or been scared to move or scared to train, or, you know, it would have been 10 times, you know, a disaster in terms of your, not just you. I mean, you just start to lose everything, right? It's use it or lose it.
Yes.
You start to become detrained in all aspects of everything. And that touches your physical being, but also your emotional, behavioral, social, all of it. Yeah.
And what you have probably seen and what you know, and I'm sure you're sort of trying to get this through to your patients and clients, is like, actually, sometimes when you're in pain, the exact thing to make the pain—I mean, pain—again, we can have a whole conversation about pain, the unpleasant sensation in your body, actually, 9 times out of 10 for me, feels better when I move. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my knees feel a little achy if I sit too much, which, you know, in grad school, you just sit. I mean, I'm sorry, there's not enough standing desks in the world. If you got to write a 30-page paper, you're going to be sitting. and you know, I would stand up from the desk after writing a midterm or something and be like, oh my God, my knees hurt, or my quads are killing me, or my hip or whatever. And the answer was to move. The answer was to get moving. And kind of going back to what you were saying before, like, just start slow. Right? Just like low barrier to entry, just start moving.
Yeah. Yeah. And then start to just build it and build it and build it. And mm-hmm. I think it's unintuitive to people who feel vulnerable in a certain area of the body, that the way through that, the solution for that is to just like put a little force through it and then test it out mm-hmm. and put a little more force through it. And mm-hmm. It's not intuitive to people who are just kind of mm-mm. alone and on their own and experiencing some kind mm-hmm. of painful sensation. But yes, like move your body weight, with some light resistance that you can feel safe with, that you can control.
Yep.
And then start to move a little bit heavier load and just start to apply mm-hmm. a little more force through those areas and just build it back up. Yeah.
But this is what we're doing. This is what our job is now. Like, you and I are both, this is sort of a good sort of full circle moment, because this is exactly it. This is what I'm like, my mission as a teacher is to teach people how to do that, to know that like, if somebody walks in my, if somebody walks in and they're like really in rough shape and they're scared. I was talking about my friend with back pain. When mm-hmm. she started, I think that her trainer had her like literally like walk into the gym, sit down on the bench and stand up. I mean, I don't think he had her do anything threatening, because there was so much built up fear around the thing. So the mm-hmm. approach that we take as educators, as clinicians, is super important, because 9 times out of 10, that is not scientific data. That's just observational data. 9 times out of 10, the pain will go away if you load it, or if you move, or if you challenge, you know, like that's the, so, but we've got to get people there. We've got, and that's my job. That's my job. That's your job.
Yep. Oh, I love it. I love it. So great. So important. So important for people to just mm-hmm. know that they can like do a thing, take matters into their own hands, not feel paralyzed, not feel frozen from fear, and like just start to explore and move and mm-hmm. push at the edges a little bit, and that's mm-hmm. it's going to be better in the long run. Totally. Mm-hmm. I like to end every interview with something, you sharing a little bit of something that you do just for you, right? I know as practitioners and coaches and trainers and clinicians and all the types of people I have on this show, we can get very, especially those of us who have been in academia, get very wrapped up in all the things that we do for our studies and for our clients. And I would love to hear, Elizabeth, what you feel like you do that is just for you. What's that?
What is that? I'm a big reader. I love fiction and I love literary nonfiction. So that's like something. It's just I just love reading. And I just took up knitting, which is a whole thing because I'm actually not a crafty, arty person. So that's a whole hard. It's a very meditative. I guess it turns out that whole knitting as meditation thing is real. But I think that the biggest thing I do for myself is I walk. And I live in the greatest city in the world, as do you. I know that mm-hmm. you're biased, just as I am. And walking, I mean, like literally getting sort of choked up thinking about how much I love this city and how much I love to walk in New York. Mm-hmm. During quarantine, we live very close to Central Park and moved right, literally like the doors closed as soon as we moved into this new apartment, very close to the park. And I spent many, many, many days in Central Park, which I hadn't really in years. I've been in New York for 30 years and got to see the seasons change and look at the birds and the flowers and, you know that this week it's yellow flower week and next week is purple flower. You know, it was just like a next level of kind of life affirmation, especially during that time. But what's funny is I also missed the city. I missed being out in traffic and running in the streets and kind of dodging people. Cause that also kind of is life affirming for me. In a less peaceful way. But I would say putting on a really comfortable pair of shoes and walking is one of my absolute favorite activities.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. And I agree with you, like when the seas of people came back, that felt super energizing and good in the city, like that kind of rush of people and that flow of the city. And all of it.
I remember we had been, yes, 100%. And what luck. I mean, during that terrible time, what a unique ability, what a unique sort of experience to be like in an empty city. I remember early in quarantine, a couple of weeks into quarantine, really missing the city. It was a bizarre thing to realize, but I missed a friend. I missed the city. Even though I was here.
Yeah.
Even though I was here. So.
Yeah, I totally feel that.
You know.
Yes. Well, I live not far from you. I was in Hell's Kitchen. So I had daily walks up to the entrance of the park at Columbus Circle and back. And then a lot of my walks were straight down through Times Square and Herald Square, which were completely deserted. Like misty spring days in the spring of 2020. It was so eerie and terrible and beautiful. And really wonderful to have all that space in some ways. Yeah. It's very strange.
Yes.
Elizabeth, I'm so excited because you are going to be teaching at my studio at Practice Human, here in Midtown Manhattan on West 27th Street on May 7th. You're teaching a 2-hour long masterclass, Introduction to Strength Training, and then you're also doing a series of classes in June. Are these for folks who are brand new to strength training, just dipping their toe in the water, wanting to learn?
Yes. So these are designed for brand new beginners. The masterclass is really just like, it's like not even dipping your toe in, it's like walking to the water, right? Like for somebody who's like, I don't even know what this is, I'm afraid. We'll get your toe dipped in by the end of the 2 hours. But in 2 hours, My goal is to address some misconceptions, to talk about why strength training is important, and then to spend about an hour, and maybe an hour and 15, hour and a half, depending on the question and answer kind of situation. Just doing probably, we'll squat and we'll probably push or pull. And then if we have time, I'll talk about hinging and another upper body movement. But just to give people a taste of how simple movements that they're probably already doing. If you're getting up and down off a chair, you're squatting. So to kind of just give people like open the door and turn on the lights and be like, here's strength training.
Sweet.
And then the course, this is, we sort of managed to find some dates to wedge it in before the summer kind of gets off to a roaring start. It's just 3 weeks, a little bit more in depth, much more movement focused. Obviously we'll focus on sort of four main movements because I think those are foundational, squat, hinge, which is also known as a deadlift, basically bending at the hips, pulling, which is like, pull up or pulling something towards you, and pushing like a push up or a bench press, pushing something away from you, and using these things in different ways. And then there'll probably be some homework, some fun homework, and we'll see what we get to in 3 weeks. It will be just enough to kind of whet your appetite, and then the hope is to come back with a much more robust program in the fall.
Sweet. Great. Yeah.
And that starts June 11th. So May 7th is the masterclass, and June 11th is the little mini course, 11, 18, and 25 of June.
Yeah, like three Sundays in June. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know you're going to be, or you have already, I think, posted the information, at least about the masterclass on May 7th on your website. So for everyone listening, you can find Elizabeth at elizabethwipf.com, and that's Elizabeth, WIPFF.com. And that's also your Instagram handle, Elizabeth Whip. And I will link how folks can find you in the show notes. I'll also link the webpage for the masterclass coming up on May 7th there as well. And if you are popping onto Practice Human's website, practicehuman.com, I'm going to put a little feature on there for Elizabeth's work because I'm so excited to have you teaching here in the space.
And your studio, I just have to say, for anyone that hasn't been there, it's such a beautiful little space. It's such a sweet little space.
You.
So even if you don't want to do any strength training, come and take the class just so you could be in Caitlin's lovely, lovely space.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I know when you came to visit, we were talking about how it's like my goal was to make this feel unintimidating in here, right? Like just like welcoming, homey, and just inviting.
It's the yoga teacher in you. Yoga teacher in you.
Maybe it's the Nebraskan in me too, a little bit. And also Juniper, who works with me here, is from Nebraska. So I think it's a little bit of that.
Oh my God.
Like, home mentality coming into this space. So thank you so much, Elizabeth. This talk was just so important and inspiring, and so much good information, especially for people who are interested in strength training, to like really go for it and dig in. And if you're feeling maybe a little apprehensive, hopefully this talk encourage you to go for it.
yes, go for it. Thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Elizabeth as much as I did. I have a small favor to ask. If you learned something here listening to this episode, or if you generally enjoy using the Practice Human podcast as a resource, please leave us a rating and a review. It'll help our conversations grow. Again, I'm so glad you're here and looking forward to speaking with you next time.